Cape Talk, Car Talk.
And we are going to head into Car Talk this afternoon. If you have any motoring questions, you can give us a call on 021-446-0567. You can also send us a WhatsApp voice note to 072-567-1567. Got a persistent and ongoing and agonizing problem or query with your car? Not sure whether you should trade it in for another used car or trade it in for a new car. Which family car is the best suited to your needs and how to cut back on how much fuel you are using every single week? Our regular motoring journalist, Chido Sisiena, is back in the driver's seat today to answer all your questions, and start sending those questions in to 021-446-0567. But first of all, he's going to be reviewing a very, very special car. Chido, a very good afternoon to you and welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you for having me on the show.
We review the BMW Z4. I still see a few of them around, of the older models, but the new model seems to be out.
Yes, correct. The Z4 is brand new to the market. It's a completely new generation. It's a completely different car from the ground up as well. And I think that, you know, it's one of those cars where it doesn't really make a lot of sense. You know, there's no real point having a two-seater car with hardly any boot space that costs 800,000 rand. So it's one of those cars that you want rather than you need. And for me, if you're going to want a car, it's got to look good. And I just find the styling very polarizing. It looks good from certain angles, but it's a very challenging design, very bold design from BMW. It certainly grabs attention, that's for sure. But for me, a little bit of a swing and a miss from BMW.
And we look at the car review for this afternoon, and we'll be looking at the Opel Corsa GSI. Let's have a look at this vehicle and see exactly how it performs, how the car drives.
Yeah, so the GSI, you know, the story is actually a little bit more than the car itself, in that this is the first time the GSI brand has made it back onto a car in South Africa. And I'm sure many of our listeners will remember the GSI brand, particularly for the very famous Opel Superbus, which was a car, a sort of a homologation special for one of the racing series in South Africa. And it was one of the fastest cars in the country at the time. And the great thing about it is it was built and developed and only sold in South Africa. So it's a real global icon of a car, and it's something we can be proud of in terms of engineering in South Africa. And the Corsa GSI is the brand's first attempt to bring the GSI nameplate back. And in many ways, I think they have done a good job. The car looks good. It handles really, really well. It's way more interesting to drive than, say, a Polo GTI. If you're a driving enthusiast, you're going to get a lot more satisfaction out of the Corsa GSI. However, you're not going to get as much power as you would from any of its rivals. And for some reason, even though they've upgraded the suspension in the GSI, they didn't upgrade the engine at all, and it's about 40% less powerful than, say, equivalent car costing about the same sort of money. And that, for me, is a little bit of a missed opportunity, because, you know, it looks good. It looks great. It looks like it has a lot of power, but it just doesn't, unfortunately. And it's not necessarily boring to drive, but I do think that it needed about an extra 20%, and that shouldn't have been terribly hard to do on Opel's side, you know?
Yeah, Opel has sort of crossed the market with a number of vehicles, from, you know, just the standard I want to drive a vehicle, to somebody who's sort of in search of a more sporty and a more dashing car. You know, this is the we are reviewing the Opel Corsa GSI at the moment with Chido. And if you have any questions about it, Chido, of course, the motoring journalist at cars.co.za. These days, everybody looks at fuel efficiency, because, I mean, even though petrol is coming down within a week or two, you're still very mindful about fuel efficiency when it comes to a car. How does this car stack up to fuel efficiency?
It's fairly impressive, actually. Little 1.4 turbocharged motor, and I think we were averaging around 8 liters to the 100. But you know, we actually, to film it, we actually closed the road out near Franschhoek, you know, for safety purposes. And so I got to throw the car around for the cameras a bit more enthusiastically than you should if you're on public roads. It actually performed really well in terms of fuel efficiency. So I think that if you drove very, very carefully, you'd probably get sort of between 6 and 7 liters to 100, which for a small petrol engine is about right. And just on the sort of general topic of fuel consumption, you know, there's something to keep in mind at the moment is that the way fuel consumption is being measured around the world has changed. So we used to be on what was called the NEC cycle, which was the way of testing fuel efficiency. It's now changed to something called the WLTP, and what that acronym stands for escapes me right now. But essentially, it's a far more realistic, real-world representation of a car's fuel efficiency. And what you'll probably notice in the marketplace and in the brochures, for instance, and in TV ads and in print ads in magazines, is that the fuel figures for quite a few cars, especially from Europe, engineered in Europe, will have changed. They will have increased. And the thing is, it doesn't bother me at all. In fact, I actually welcome the change because the previous figures were virtually fantasy. You know, they had almost no bearing in the real world. And it's great that the European legislators change the regulations, and we generally sort of follow suit, or the car makers in this country follow suit, because essentially they have no choice. And even though it's not regulated in South Africa that way, that is how the figures will be represented going forward, as far as I understand.
Chatting to motoring journalist at cars.co.za, Chiru de Siena. Chiru, I've got Tyron on the line from Kells River, and he wants the thoughts on the Mazda Sport Active. Tyron, a very good afternoon to you, and your comment or question for Chiru?
Zain, it's a question. I've been driving the Mazda Sport 3 Active for the last 3 years.
Mm. Okay.
It's an amazing car.
Yeah.
Definitely the best car I've ever owned. I'm tossing up now between the CX-3 and the CX-5. I prefer a smaller car.
Okay.
What else do you like?
Do you often have...
The CX-3 or the 5?
Do you often require carrying people in the back seats?
Yes, we go to the Cedarburg quite often. We go out for weekends. Mm.
Okay. That for me is the real Achilles heel of the CX-3. The rear seat space is actually pretty awful. It's not going to be comfortable for anyone over, say, 5 foot. So if it's kids, that's totally fine. But if you've got adults in the back there, they're not going to be comfortable at all in the CX-3. And it's a pity, because I actually think the CX-3 is a really great little car.
I love it.
It's a super car. It looks good. It drives well. The interior is top-notch. But you know, if you do need those back seats, then I would say go for the CX-5. And obviously, there's a big price difference potentially. But you know, a demo CX-5 or one with sort of 2 years, 40,000 on the clock might be a good purchase.
There we go, Tyron. Hopefully that answers your question. And that's the thoughts on the Mazda Sport Active and whether to go for the CX-3 or the CX-5. Well, Tyron, if you're going to go family tripping, I think you need to put a bit of extra money in there and buy the CX-5. Chiru, another question here is, I'm looking to buy a used BMW 1 Series. Are there any serious issues that I should be worried about? You know, and what else should I consider? Asks one listener off the WhatsApp line.
Sure. The 1 Series is very popular, and it's actually, from what I understand, fairly difficult to find very good secondhand one, especially if you're looking to buy. So in 2016, there was a facelift. Before the facelift, the car didn't look, let's say, it didn't look as good as it does now, and it actually has affected resale values, and because people don't want the car pre-facelift, so everyone's looking for post-2016 models, and they're actually quite hard to come by. The one thing I would say about the 1 Series is, if you're going to buy older than 2016, there was a car badge, the 116, and I think the 118 for a while, and that used an engine which was co-developed by BMW and the Peugeot group. And it was a 1.6 turbo, and it was really, really widely used in a bunch of Peugeot products, Citroen products, BMW products, including Mini and the 1 Series. And that engine, for me, I've just heard too many stories about it. In fact, we have one in the family. My cousin owns one, and his car's broken down 3 times, and it doesn't even have 50,000 Ks on the clock. So I would be wary of that engine. I'd look for another petrol. There are quite a few diesels in the range as well. If you do large distances, long distances, then it might make a bit of sense to get a diesel. But personally, I'd stick to a petrol if I was looking for a second-hand one series, and something post-2016, I think, is a good way to go.
Just correct me if I'm wrong, because the one series, when it came out as a 120. And then yes, after that, the other ones, because I've still got a newspaper clipping, of me actually buying the very first one series, and the registration number there was, first one Western Province. Okay. It was an incredible car. It was really a very, very nippy car. But moving along, Churin, we're chatting to Churin de Siena in terms of, he's the journalist at cars.co.za. And if you have any motoring questions, you can send us a WhatsApp message to 0725671567, or give us a call on 0214460567. How far are we in South Africa in terms of electric vehicles? Because I think this is the crunch going forward. I think Volvo has already made sort of the intention known that by 2023 they'd be moving and fast tracking that. In South Africa, how far are we tracking, and what is the availability of electric vehicles at the moment?
We're getting there. You know, we're doing better, and I have to give Jaguar South Africa credit. You know, they're working with a company called Grid Cars, which are specialists in installing high powered superchargers. And Jaguar South Africa invested 30 million rand into the country, putting up, if memory serves, 80 charging stations around the country. And what they focused on was obviously the metro areas, but they also focused on the trunk routes. So the idea is that you'll be able to drive your electric car, any electric car, because anyone can use the station, between Joburg, Cape Town, Joburg, Durban, Cape Town, PE, PE, Durban, etc. So the idea is, so in terms of infrastructure, we're in a way better place now than we ever have been. And it's great to see some of that corporate investment coming into the country. The reason why Jag did it is because they introduced their I-Pace, which is actually World Car of the Year, which is an incredible achievement for an electric car. I think, if I'm not mistaken, it's the first time a World Car of the Year has ever been awarded to a fully electric vehicle. So it's a phenomenal car, but it also comes at a phenomenal price. The cheapest I-Pace is 1.7 million rand. And of course, that is far, far, far out of the reach of the average South African motorist. And so the other car that you can choose from at the moment, the only other electric vehicle on South African roads, is the BMW i3. And off the top of my head, the pricing there is currently between 600,000 and 700,000 rand. So also extremely expensive option if you're looking to get into full EV. And that is unfortunately the entire range of your choice right now, which will be changing this year and next year as more manufacturers introduce cars. So it's going to be a while. It is going to take a while, but the reality is that South Africa, in most in many sort of industries, follows international trends, follows European trends, American trends. And you know, right now in Norway, for instance, the best-selling car in Norway is the BMW i3, and one of the reasons for that is because they've invested massively in electric infrastructure, and it's just cheaper, more convenient, easier to run an electric car in Norway. So obviously, we're quite far away from that, but the thing about electric cars for me is they just make economic sense. It's just as simple as that. If you crunch the numbers, they are cheaper to run and cheaper to maintain. And usually when something makes economic sense, it will eventually prevail. And that is what, that is the direction I think we're heading in. And it is going to take a while. I would say, you know, widespread EV adoption in South Africa, probably 10 years away. You know, maybe that's being, you know, not conservative, the opposite, negative, negative outlook. But yeah, you know, conservatively, yeah, we're looking at some time here. And obviously, a car like the I-Pace, as good as it is, I mean, as a motoring journalist, how can I recommend that? You know, rather buy a house, you know?
I found a security company in the sort of Monte Vista Goodwood area who's got a clever idea. They bought three electric vehicles, and what they do with the companies that they protect, or companies that need protection, they actually go down to these companies, and if they are able to charge their vehicles at your company during the course of the evening or at night, they will give you, while the car's charging, they'll give you free security cover.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's super interesting. And, you know, I know of, I've spoken to this gentleman a few times whose home in Cape Town, I think in Somerset West, is actually off the grid completely. And he's got an electric car. So he's charging his car using sunlight, you know, and I mean, that's the dream, you know, that's completely free and completely clean energy running your car. And so it's possible. It's doable. It's doable right now. You can do it today if you've got the money and the capital to do so. So, you know, the other concern, of course, in this country is the stability of our power, the power supply, the utility. Obviously, the national utility is in trouble. We all know that. But, you know, the reality is that we do have spare power in the grid at night. We have a lot of spare power in the national grid at night. And electric cars are mostly charged at night, overnight in people's homes. Yeah. And I really don't think it's going to be a massive issue. Sure, it's not going to be smooth sailing, and petrol and diesel will be around for a long time to come, but I do think things will improve.
Tell me very quickly off the WhatsApp line, how long do electric car batteries last?
Anywhere at the moment between sort of 8 and 12 years. So it's getting better all the time, but you know, Audi, for instance, with their new e-tron, they say that you probably won't need to replace the battery. They reckon it'll last for the lifetime of the vehicle. So, you know, it's improving a lot, and funnily enough, Elon Musk wanted to give an infinite warranty on his battery, but his marketing people said no, so they did 8 years. So it's you know, 8 years is about the number that's sort of accepted in the industry, but batteries are getting better all the time.